Welcome to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs Podcast. My name is Fergal Byrne. Every week, I talk to inspiring social entrepreneurs and changemakers dedicated to building a better world. Here, they tell their stories, the highs and the lows, and share what they have learned to help other social entrepreneurs and changemakers on their journeys. I'm very pleased today to welcome Nadine Gall to the podcast. Nadine is an ecologist whose practice spans the fields of sustainability, technology, and urbanism. Nadine is Managing Director at Green City Watch in Amsterdam, a global award-winning geospatial AI company focused on renaturing cities, improving urban ecosystems. The first product service is focused on urban forest management. So thank you very much, Nadine, for joining me today on the Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs podcast.
Grateful for the opportunity, Fergal. Thanks for having me.
So maybe just to begin with, can you tell us a little bit about your background and maybe give us a little bit of a synopsis or an overview of Green City Watch and what you actually do?
Absolutely. So my academic background is in ecology, evolutionary biology, and earth sciences. And I'm currently a PhD candidate in ecological engineering at University College Dublin's Spatial Dynamics Lab and MIT's Sensible City Lab. I grew up in the suburbs of southwestern Ontario in Canada. And growing up there, I was always fascinated by how natural ecosystems just seem to be encroached and engulfed by urban development. So I wanted to build cities that were in better harmony with nature. Although that mission often feels more like an oxymoron. And Green City Watch was really born out of that same desire to do more for urban ecology. As we're living in this era of data-fueled smart cities, and even though those kind of hold fast potential to drive efficiency and improve the quality of life for all citizens, the very natural capital on which those cities rely really risks being left behind by the digital revolution. And we figured at Green City Watch that if we view trees as the urban infrastructural assets that they are, they need formal recognition of their actual measurable value, if you will, in numbers and figures. So Green City Watch uses very high resolution remote sensing to understand and communicate those numbers to cities. In simpler terms, we take nature online.
Right. Now, one of the big, I guess they call mega trends and so forth, is growing urbanization. Cities are becoming, we're having more of them, and they're becoming more densely populated. Can you talk a little bit about the trends there? I don't know to what degree you have a sense of that, and the degree to which ideas around green cities and greening are taking hold.
Yeah, so absolutely, growing urbanization is a mega trend, and one I think that will be incredibly defining of the next decade. At the same time, we also have climate change as a defining issue of this decade, and I think the two really go hand in hand, and that's exactly what makes the intersection of sustainability and urban centers so interesting. I always believe that cities really have the power to change the world. And yes, there are these monsters of consumption and the world's biggest polluters and emitters of CO2. But for centuries, they've also been the centers of commerce and culture and innovation. I like to call them, you know, the greatest social experiment that we've ever been able to witness. You know, they're really the birthplace of some of humankind's greatest ideas. And as the majority of future humans will live in cities, it just makes sense that our solution to climate change will reside there too.
Absolutely. And one of the phenomena I guess we've seen is some kind of deadlock when it comes to taking action on climate change, environmental crisis at a national political level. But it seems the same time that other actors are taking up the reins. We've seen in the United States, the states becoming more active. There's a number of regional initiatives and cities. There are a number of initiatives where cities are working together as well, collectively to share best practice and also to make change.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to kind of a really interesting kind of trend, because cities have almost felt, you know, okay, if this is the way that our national policies are going, you know, we're big enough, we're bad enough to, you know, come up with our own autonomy. And in a lot of these cases, cities are very autonomous, you know, in a lot of countries, municipalities actually have that power to take full ownership around everything that happens within those urban boundaries and borders. And you have great organizations coming up like C40 and ICLEI and the Covenant of Local Mayors, which really, and several more across the world, which really kind of speak to this broader trend of cities taking ownership of the fact that, you know, they may or may not be responsible for a lot of these problems, but at the same time, they have the innovation capacity to come up with the best solutions.
Yes. Now, what kind of products and services do you offer, and to whom do you offer them?
Yeah, so Green City Watch has developed a number of different products, and one that we're most excited about right now is something called TreeTect. And TreeTect is specifically really targeted towards urban foresters and arborists. Essentially what TreeTect does is it's kind of seen a gaping hole in the market and in city governments when it comes to developing tree inventories. So a tree inventory is quite simply put, a simple database or a map of all of the trees, all of the publicly owned trees in a city. And it'll include information on the species, the location, maybe the condition, the size, and these things. And tree inventories have been around since the 1800s and when the first one ever was created. And they really are a prerequisite in planning for and making sound urban forestry and green space management decisions, particularly in longer term monitoring. It is essential to kind of track longitudinal data about the same individual trees and planting sites. The only problem is, of course, is that on the ground tree inventory surveys. So what I mean by that is tree inventory surveys that are filled out with manual surveying. They can be notoriously expensive, difficult to maintain. They often have errors because they're based on field observations in terms of actual metrics and measurements. And I think one of the most compelling points is that they fail to visualize the up to 70% of privately owned urban trees, which are still offering significant community benefits. And just because a tree is on private land doesn't mean that the city doesn't protect it, doesn't mean that they don't maintain it even sometimes, and it definitely doesn't mean that the city doesn't have a vested interest in trying to understand the benefits that are coming out of those trees. So what TreeTect does is it offers a digital automated tree inventory coupled with near real-time health monitoring of those same trees on a regular basis. So essentially what we do is we fill out that baseline tree inventory and monitor those same trees using solely remote sensing. And with that, I mean high resolution satellite imagery, LiDAR imagery, or even drones.
Wow. And to what extent do cities tend to, I guess, do they overestimate the number of trees? Or what are some of the issues with the way they approach measurement now?
So I say the primary issue with the way they approach measurement now is just the fact that it takes so long. If you can imagine, you know, put yourself into an urban forester's or a city arborist's shoes and imagine that you might be responsible for upwards of 50,000 to, in some larger cities, perhaps 400,000 trees. And you're responsible for not only the day-to-day operations of those trees, you know, the maintenance, the pruning, the irrigation, but also just the overall strategy and the master plan when it comes to protecting and oftentimes increasing the number of those trees. And it's not just about planting more trees, but also, you know, maintaining the trees as well. So something that I like to talk about a lot is this concept of tree longevity. So we hear a lot about people wanting to expand the lifespan of trees in cities just because they face such a difficult time. But it's more than just expanding the lifespan of trees. It's also expanding their health span. So not just the amount of years that trees live, but also the amount of trees that the amount of years that trees live well in cities. And these are the kinds of responsibilities that arborists and urban foresters have. But without kind of the proper data, it's completely outdated to think a status report every 5 to 10 years would suffice. So in the same tune, the traditional methods still used today to inventory, map, and monitor these trees are, in my opinion, in desperate need of an upgrade.
Yeah. And to what extent are some of the leaders in what we might call green cities focusing on trees? What kind of dimensions you're talking about here? For I mean, it's an area that's had some attention, but I guess there's considerable potential here for growth.
Absolutely. One of the things that I touch upon in my own PhD research, and something that we're seeing a lot of in this market, is also looking at the potential of sensors and sensor-based networks to really kind of provide an indication of something that trees are really struggling with, which is their soil health. So a lot of the time we talk just about trees, and we forget about, you know, the very matrix in which these trees have to survive in, which is the soil. And soil is under a lot of stress in cities. Simple things like not having adequate available soil volumes, things like soil compaction, construction practices, poor nursery stock, all of these things are really kind of threatening the maintenance of building a mature tree canopy. And I think one of the most exciting things is having soil sensors actually be placed in cities to kind of give more of this real-time information in terms of how soil in cities is doing. One of the best ways, I think, to explain kind of the narrative surrounding this is I've always been incredibly inspired by the work of a forester at University of British Columbia named Dr. Suzanne Simard. And what Dr. Simard has done is she's really kind of revolutionized this idea that trees communicate with one another. So for decades and for centuries even, we understood that trees had this tree roots and the fungi, the fungal fibers that tree roots attach to underground, had this kind of trading and bartering relationship where the trees would swap out their carbon, their sugars, really their energy, in exchange for nutrients and all these other things that their tree roots weren't able to access in the soil, but these fungal fibers, which are much more and much smaller, were able to. And what Dr. Simard really revolutionized was this idea that it wasn't just individual trees speaking or communicating with these roots, but really trees communicating with each other in this broader ecosystem. So no longer were trees kind of these solitary silos, but in fact, they were helping cooperating with one another and helping each other survive. And there's all kinds of research to back this in terms of nutrient sharing and carbon sharing and even some really magnificent work that shows that when a tree is dying, it'll actually send out its remaining resources into this network to help save these trees. And it that kind of basis was a huge inspiration for me when I came up with the term the Internet of Nature, together with another colleague of mine, Sophie Niedoslawski, also at the University of British Columbia. And what we felt like, if we are going to put these trees into these really difficult, extreme conditions, otherwise known as cities, humans are going to have to be able to step in and act as tree stewards to keep those trees alive longer and living better and healthier lives. And that for us is really, you know, where in a natural forest, nature is able to step in and take that step to rejuvenating those trees when it's necessary. In cities, technology, and especially sensors in this case, can really play a role at stepping in and alerting us human stewards to step in when it's necessary. So that that gets me really excited.
Yes, I've come across that research. It's fascinating, the idea of cooperation and ecosystems and trees communicating in that way. Very revolutionary way of thinking about things. Yeah, very interesting. tree stewards, that's an interesting idea. Is that something that's common now, or you see a lot of attention to people talking now about new plans to grow all trees and all kinds of areas, you know, fantastic initiatives, although I guess there are significant questions about the kind of trees that are grown and so forth, but maybe not so much attention in that I've come across, at least in terms of looking after the trees you already have, and certainly in an urban context.
Yeah, there was some incredible research that came out of Boston University. And basically what this, at their lab of urban ecology there, and basically what this research showed is that if we continue dealing with our urban forestry stock as we are, we are actually going towards this net loss of carbon, which is of carbon sequestration, which is a huge shock to people because people think, you know, and trees are responsible for sequestering a lot of carbon in cities. But actually in the first, you know, 2, 3, upwards of 5 years of life, trees can actually emit carbon, which means that if we are living in a city where we are not taking the necessary means to keep our trees alive longer so that they're reaching that mature age of 20, 25, 30 plus years, it isn't really until that age that we start to really, really capitalize on all of these benefits trees give us. So it's of the utmost importance that we're making sure that trees have the water they need, but most importantly, the space that they need in cities to become these huge carbon suckers. And oftentimes that's not happening. And instead what's happening is that trees are only living to be about 7, 10, maybe max 13 years of age, at which point they'll be cut down. And these, you know, teenage trees will be cut down, and in its place will be a new seedling, if even that. But let's hope that a new seedling will be placed there. So then again, you know, it's almost like you're getting so close, and every time you're getting to that threshold where you finally have a tree that starts really adding community benefits, you're cutting it down, and we're simply not letting it have the maximum impact that it could. So that's where I think this concept of tree stewards is incredibly important, because again, going back to what I said earlier, you know, being one person in a city and being responsible for upwards of hundreds of thousands of trees, you need the whole community pitching in to keep these trees alive and alive longer and healthier.
Fascinating. It's fascinating. So can you tell me about the beginning of the company and what's your technology here? Is this a technology that's widely available? And you know, how did you go about getting off the ground?
Sure. So we were founded just 2 years ago. And we were four earth scientists who had all met while studying earth sciences at the University of Amsterdam. Post-graduation, we had all gone off and done our own things and came back together to enter this challenge, which was put forward by Maxar, the world's leading supplier of high-resolution commercial satellite imagery. And Maxar had a very simple question, and that was, you know, satellite imagery is being used in the defense and intelligence sectors, but we believe a lot more can be done to apply this new rapidly developing data source to sustainable development. So we entered with our idea that this imagery could be used to better monitor our urban green spaces. And we were completely shocked. We won the challenge up against UNICEF and Duke University and Oxford University. And, you know, we were four friends building this in the evenings and weekends with pizza and beer. So we were absolutely thrilled. And from there, we felt like there was a huge opportunity to turn this into much more than just winning a challenge, but actually building out a full-fledged business. And since that time, we've been operating more or less as a consultancy for the first 18 months. And in the last 6 months, we've really been moving towards a product model, which we're really excited to build out this new product and transitioning towards more of a software as a service model with clients paying monthly or annual subscription fees. And that for us, we've always been a very mission-driven organization. So being able to work on a product that has that kind of scalability, and knowing that in operating in such a way, we'll be able to reach so many more cities and so many, and help so many more urban foresters. That's really what continues to get us jumping out of the bed every morning.
That's fantastic. Have you any sense why you won that? Why your approach might have been different or captivating?
That's a great question. I think honestly, it's bringing together two seemingly very different worlds. I think cities are seen as things that perhaps were monitored. I think it really was the idea that, you know, bringing these two very seemingly separate worlds together, the idea of remote sensing and space-based observation through something as small as parks and cities. And those two seem maybe very distant from each other, but in fact, I think they're quite related. I mean, remote sensing used to be used for tracking deforestation in the Amazon. And now we're talking about deforestation in cities. So even though those concepts might seem far related, I think bringing those two things together is what ultimately helped us win over the jury.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And your end client, who are they? And to what degree do they need to already have a certain level of technical expertise, sophistication to interact and use this data, or to fit into, you know, the way they operate?
Yeah, absolutely. So the urban foresters and arborists that we've been fortunate enough to speak with have all more or less expressed a desire for the same thing, which is up to the minute, real-time information on the status of their urban forest. So I often relate it to, arborists really are tree doctors. And if you could imagine that if you were an actual doctor and you had a bunch of patients in your waiting room, it would be incredibly helpful to you if you had a way to kind of get, you know, that clipboard of information on each individual patient that'll give you the quick lowdown of how that patient is doing. That is exactly what arborists need to do their jobs properly, and it's data that they simply don't have. And the reason that they don't have this data is because it's simply too expensive and takes too long to gather that information on the ground. So that's precisely where we step in, and that's where we offer our technology, is to offer that same information and perhaps even more, because there's so much more that we can analyze when you kind of take that bird's eye view, and offer it to them in a way that is ready to go in terms of what they need it for. And that's an ongoing process. So as we work with our city clients and really kind of co-develop this solution, it's something that we really believe in, is co-developing with the market instead of, you know, hiding out in a basement for 6 months and then trying to bring a product to market. We really believe we're better off, you know, developing this together with the market, even if that opens us up to, you know, a bunch of failures, which are, inevitably going to happen. I believe it kind of really strengthens the outcome in the end.
Yeah.
So our clients are cities, and specifically there are arborists and urban foresters within those cities.
And the technology is satellite technology, essentially.
Indeed. So we operate in a space called GeoAI, which stands for Geospatial Artificial Intelligence. And essentially what that means is taking any kind of remote sensing imagery. So that could be a satellite image. It could be, and that could be an optical image or an infrared image. It could be drone imagery. It could be LiDAR imagery. And LiDAR, for your listeners that aren't as familiar with it, is essentially a technology which emits intense focused beams of light and measures the time it takes back for the reflections to be detected by the sensor. And essentially what that, it gives you a great indication of height models, of biomass models, and essentially is a higher resolution way of mapping vegetation. And essentially what we do is we have those different kinds of imagery as input. And from there, we're building out our algorithms to basically recognize patterns in those imagery. So the more actually cities we do, the faster that process becomes.
That's very interesting. So how much can you tell about the health of a tree from a satellite photograph?
Right. So there's a number of tree metrics that are kind of baseline metrics that we measure. So these can just to kind of map out what we have in our urban forestry stock. So that could be identifying tree species, measuring the size, and the location, so that they really have that baseline information. And then, of course, we have the health of that tree. So the health of that tree can be measured also through a number of ways. So you can track the size of its growth over time. You can also look at things like growing space conflicts. One of the most exciting things that we can do is we can actually use something called an NDVI. And an NDVI stands for a Normalized Difference Vegetation Index. And essentially how it works is that by comparing visible and infrared light from a satellite image, we can measure the relative amount of vegetation. So essentially how an NDVI is calculated is it is calculated from the visible and near infrared light reflected by that vegetation. So healthy vegetation actually absorbs most of the visible light that hits it. And it reflects a large portion of the near infrared light. So that's actually a measurement that you're getting back when you run that analysis. And that can actually give you an indication of how that tree is doing. And if it's not doing well, that might be an indication, for example, that that tree needs more water in very simplistic terms. And essentially what we're trying to do here is we're not trying to do a diagnosis. Because we of course realize that, and as an ecologist myself, I would never say that this completely replaces field work, but we're trying to optimize that field work. So, you know, if we're able to analyze 400,000 trees from above and we're able to note, you know, there's 10 trees in this area that need attention, well, that urban forester or that arborist is able to direct his or her attention to that tree, go to that tree in the field and diagnose what the area, what the situation might be. And I think that's really the most powerful thing that we're doing here. Because if you imagine if we weren't alerting that there might be a problem there, that might only be seen when it's too late, when that tree is actually dead and there's nothing more that you can do. And I think that's quite the sad thing when you walk around a city and you see a lot of dead trees is trees don't die just like that. It's a long and it's a laborious, slow process for a tree to die most of the time, which is really an opportunity because there it means that there's a ton of chances to step in and intervene before it's too late. And that's exactly what we're trying to help with.
Fantastic. I guess it assumes that cities have already some kind of resources here to deal with this and some kind of, you know, do have the resources to track this kind of information and B, respond to it. Is that the case? Is there a growing interest in this?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I hear time and time again is that parks departments and urban forestry departments are always scavenging for resources. They're kind of chronically underfunded. And I think, again, optimizing those workflows is going to be quite critical in making sure that the limited resources they do have can be used in the most effective way possible.
Right. Now, what can you talk a little bit about your business model? Is this technology you've developed? You license the technology. Do you then build, as you say, the algorithms and the interpretive processes around that? And maybe talk a little bit about that side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. So our business model is in the first year we of trading, we operated more or less as a consultancy. And now as we're developing our new product, we're transitioning towards a software as a service model. So essentially what that means is that city clients pay for a one-time fee for us to kind of bring this baseline tree inventory. For some cities might have a tree inventory already, but it might be 5 or 10 years old, or oftentimes it'll only have the public trees, the publicly owned trees. So what we'll do is we'll step in and we'll create a tree inventory that either builds on an existing one or creates an entirely new one. And we'll charge for that tree inventory. And from there, we'll work with a client and set up essentially a subscription-based model where clients are paying for monthly, biannual, or annual updates to that tree inventory, which will track things like the addition of new trees, the removal, sometimes illegal removal of trees, the composition of species has changed, how trees have grown over the past year, and what makes more sense on a monthly trajectory is mapping that health of trees. So all these different features, which can be customized based on what the city is looking for, but more or less, it's a baseline tree inventory coupled with a subscription-based monthly, biannual, or annual monitor.
Right. Very interesting. And what's your distribution model? Do you have a sales team, or how do you get the service in the hands of your target clients?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're just starting out with this product. So we are actually in the works with two US-based cities right now, co-developing this solution, and is the hope after that work that we'll be more or less ready to bring it to the market as a full-fledged product offering. But we're in no rush to really bring it to the market. What we're more keen to do is to continue to work with cities to co-develop this together, because each city is going to be different. And for us, the more cities we do across different climatic zones, the better our product becomes. And it's a unique opportunity for cities to also work with us at a discounted rate, to really kind of be one of the first front runners who's using this. And in terms of, we have a small sales team that's set up. We like to use LinkedIn as a main lead generation channel, but we also do a ton of public speaking. So there's a number of keynote presentations that we have coming up, which hopefully we'll be speaking to our main target audience throughout those presentations to really kind of get this technology and this service in the hands of as many cities as possible.
Yes, and I guess it's this area, the buzzword, machine learning, which is an area I don't know very much about, but is an area which is getting a lot of attention and seems to be developing very fast. Presumably, is that something that will impact the service that you're offering, the ability of the algorithms, the technology to tell you more about the health of the trees and so forth?
Absolutely. So It helps tremendously. So it really helps specifically with offering a way to do this faster. So every city that we do, these processes become faster. And essentially what I mean by this is that, you know, if we did one city and it was able to, you know, with a high degree of accuracy, identify all of the different tree species, if we end up working with another city in the same climatic zone, it'll be that much quicker and it'll require that much less ground truthing to be able to do the same kind of species identification. And in the same tune, if we're working across climatic zones, it's important for us to work with several cities in those climatic zones so that our algorithms, you know, really, they really improve. Each data point you enter improves that algorithm. It's really a question of the more data, the better.
Yeah, very interesting. Now, your background is a scientist. What's it been like working as a social entrepreneur? What's your role? What are the key kind of management roles in the company? And can you talk a little bit about life as a social entrepreneur?
Sure. Yeah. So for me personally, the biggest challenge is balancing a full-time PhD with a full-time business. But I'm incredibly lucky to have such a great team at Green City Watch who fully support me in that, and even more so really see the value of the research that I'm doing throughout my PhD. In terms of other challenges, I think it's as a young tech startup, it's always a challenge really twofold. One, as a tech startup, to communicate your message and your use case in a way that really makes sense to your target audience. Because even though we use key concepts within AI, machine learning, deep learning, all of these massive buzzwords that you see everywhere, even though those are integral to how we operate as a business, they're not integral to how our target audience sees us. Our target audience is looking for use cases. They're looking for concrete ways, how can your tech help me keep my trees alive longer and healthier? So it's really on us to translate that effectively. And honestly, the more and more we work with cities, the easier that becomes. And the more that we really are able to use those cities as as cheerleaders for what we do. You know, there's nothing like being able to say, we worked with city A, and for city B to be able to see that and say, ah, finally, it makes sense to me. That's also how I can use this technology. So those things are incredibly helpful to us. And because all of ours have our background, because all of us have our background in science, that doesn't always come naturally to us, right? You know, we are trained in bringing across information in a very scientific way, and that is not as helpful when it comes to business. So that's been a challenge that we've been working through. And secondly, I think as a young tech startup, there's always this choice of where are you going to invest your time and the little money that you have to grow the business. Are you going to invest it in sales, or are you going to invest it in tech and product development? And coming up with that perfect balance, that's something that I think we'll continue to start struggle with as we grow and have to keep making those decisions.
Yes, I guess. Are there other ways of partnering? Are there other organizations already in contact with your target audience that you can work with? Or is the size of a client relationship, would you get potentially a whole city, or is it areas, or is it, you know, I guess it varies, but to what extent would you get a contract, you know, potentially for quite a large area?
Yeah, so how we like to do it is we typically start out with a city and agree to do a small paid demo for a neighborhood, for example, just so that we can really, we find we're much better at showing rather than telling. So we'll actually go in and we'll offer our technology for that smaller neighborhood so that the city can really see, okay, this is how it works, and this is what it might look like if we were to scale that up to the rest of the city. So that I find is a really, you know, easy way to go about it, especially when you're going into a city with, you know, a massive population and a massive area size. It's important to really start small, show what you could do, and then go on from there.
Right. Just to make sure I understand, because presumably you have the data for a particular area, for example. Why is it easier to focus in a small area? Is it because of the extra algorithms that you're using, that you need to put in place to try and read the data to get more information on the tree health? I'm not sure I understand.
Yeah, no. So for I guess the focusing on a small area is really kind of to get cities on board. And so it's kind of like a little like a teaser, almost like a trial of, you know, this is what our technology would look like for this one neighborhood, so that they get a really good idea of what it looks like in practice and how they might, you know, so they might actually in that neighborhood see, okay, well, we see here that these trees aren't doing well. They might actually visit those trees in the field and see that that is in fact not the case. So that can really kind of help and strengthen our argument towards doing the entire city. Oftentimes, cities can also be, and understandably so, but cautious of our capabilities of also measuring private trees. So they're keen to trial it in a small area. And if they like what they see, then oftentimes we're lucky and fortunate enough to be able to work with the entire city from there. But it really depends on the size of the city. You know, if we're working with a smaller city, it might make more sense just to do the whole city in one go and not spend our time doing the small neighborhood analysis first. Yeah. And in terms of the technical side of things, you know, it really doesn't matter whether you do a neighborhood or the whole city. Of course, it's a little bit of extra time for the larger city. But in terms of, you know, our big mission here is to stay scalable so that we can do this for cities across the world fast, and most importantly, keep it affordable for cities. So that scalability really plays a role into that as well.
Very interesting. Very interesting. How have you been funded? And can you talk a little bit about your experience funding?
Yeah, so we've been bootstrapping Green City Watch since the beginning. So we've yet to take any outside capital and have instead really chosen to fuel growth internally from cash flow, either produced from consultancy earlier on in the business and now through these product co-development trajectories that we're in with cities. The reason why we've chosen to do that is we believe very strongly in rapid iteration and in what they call user-centric product development. So really having your user center to all of the development that you do, we believe and we've seen to be incredibly fruitful in our development. So until it's absolutely necessary, we will continue to bootstrap Green City Watch in this way and not take on any outside capital.
Great. What's next for you? What's the next stage in the development of the business, Nadine?
So 2020 is going to be a big year. We're launching TreeTech, our new product. I'm personally giving three keynotes at different conferences around Europe. So there's Trees, People, and the Built Environment in Birmingham. There's COGX in London and the Next Web in Amsterdam. And so I'm really excited to kind of spread the gospel through those means. Public speaking absolutely terrifies me, but at the same time gives me an incredible boost of adrenaline. And I think it's such an incredibly effective medium at storytelling, a powerful way of storytelling. And if all goes well, I'm finishing my PhD this year. So a lot to look forward to.
Well, I wish you the very best of success with all that and with the business and your research. And thank you so much for joining us today and sharing the great work you're doing.
Thank you for having me on. It was an absolute pleasure to chat.
Thank you for listening to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneur podcast. I hope you found this interview inspiring. Please make sure to visit www.inspiringsocialentrepreneurs.com and subscribe to make sure you don't miss any future podcasts.